Welcome to the What's Up ABQ podcast. With things still under lockdown and stress levels off the charts, you may be thinking about how to take care of your mental health. Have you ever considered hypnosis?
You are getting sleepy. You will do Ratsvami's every bidding whenever you hear the word Madagascar.
Yeah, that's what many people think of when you hear that word hypnotist, a person with wild eyes swinging a pocket watch in front of your face who can make you do anything through mind control. But Ryan and Lindsay's guest today is here to shatter that stereotype.
When you see those stage shows and they're clucking like chickens or doing whatever weird things that they are having them do, it's because they've said yes.
It's more psychology than Psychic Friends Network. Helping you feel better, that's all about today's episode, and it's What's Up ABQ.
What's up, Albuquerque? This is Lindsay.
And this is Ryan.
And this is season two of What's Up, ABQ. So what's up, Albuquerque? This is another episode of What's Up, ABQ. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Ryan.
And today we have...
Robert Sapien.
Tell us where we're at today.
So we are just off of Lomas and Girard in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we're at a hypnotherapy office. And there are three hypnotherapists that practice out of this building, and this is our offices also for Sapien Wellness.
Hypnotherapy. Tell us a little bit about what hypnotherapy is and kind of how you got started.
I think I'll probably start by saying what it isn't.
Okay.
Just to kind of debunk the myths around hypnosis and hypnotherapy and stuff. Many people out that are listening have probably seen stage shows. Certainly the vast majority of the listeners have seen Scooby-Doo, and they use a lot of hypnosis on Scooby-Doo with them walking around, Shaggy walking around in a trance, etc., or Scooby. And so those types of situations introduce some myths about it, okay? So first of all, a person does not lose control. They are in complete control while they're undergoing hypnosis or hypnotherapy. They remember everything that they talk about. And when I say they're under complete control, that means that the hypnotist or hypnotherapist can't make somebody do something they don't want to do, okay? On the stage, for example, when you see those stage shows and they're clucking like chickens or doing whatever weird things that they are having them do, it's because they want that experience, and so they've said yes. Okay. In fact, I can't even hypnotize anybody unless they want to be hypnotized. All right. So they don't lose control. They're in complete control. They remember everything. They can move their body. It's not paralyzed or anything. They can move their body while they're in hypnosis. We call it a trance, but they can move their body when they're in a trance. So those are just some of the myths. What it is it's really helping the individual access parts of their mind that they don't usually access. So it helps an individual access their subconscious mind, which is, quite frankly, the most powerful part of our mind, okay? Most people, as adults, are functioning in their conscious mind, where logic, reasoning, willpower are all at. But what this type of work does is it helps a person get into their subconscious mind and look at and resolve and work through limiting beliefs that they have about themselves, about the world around them. Okay. And so that's basically what it is. It's helping a person actively gain access to their subconscious mind. Now, a person naturally accesses their subconscious mind daily, but this is a way to do it actively. Okay. So other ways, extreme prayer, yoga, sometimes during a massage, your subconscious mind is open. During immense and intense situations, emotional situations, such as the scene of a crash, your subconscious mind is open to suggestion at that time. Authority figures have access to our subconscious mind, teachers, parents. What that means is that because our subconscious mind is suggestible to them, what they say can get into the subconscious mind as a suggestion, okay? Daydreaming. Subconscious activity. Watching television can be subconscious activity. That's partly why they've outlawed subliminal messaging, etc., because of the suggestibility that occurs with that. And then there's the formal ways, meditation and hypnosis. Meditation definitely is a very well-known way to access the subconscious mind. And in fact, the same brain waves are activated if you're in a hypnotic or meditative state. So it's the same state of mind. Biggest differences between the two too, our meditation tends to be a little more passive. Even gaining access to that or undergoing or going into meditation tends to be more passive, as opposed to hypnosis, which tends to be more active. There are passive forms of hypnosis and hypnotherapy, but I'm trained more in the active way.
So how did you get started on this?
It's a friend of mine who was a physician as well, was telling me about his child. We have children that are very similar aged. And this was a number of years ago. And just mentioned almost in passing that he had taken his son to a dentist. And the dentist had used some hypnosis.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Yeah. And because of that, they were able to do fillings and everything with minimal medication. Okay. And I want to come back to that point with the minimal medication. So I thought, well, boy, that would be really great to bring that into the clinical setting. I usually work when I do clinical work, I work in a pediatric emergency department. And so I thought, boy, it would really be, I think, helpful to bring that in for the kids in those kinds of settings. And so I sought out treatment for that. When I said I wanted to come back to the minimal medication, what I really advocate for in this therapy and using this is using it, if it's for a medical complaint or medical situation, really using it as an adjunct and as an additive. So still doing traditional and regular Western medicine, but then adding this to that in order to help the person work through those limiting beliefs that just aren't responding to conventional medicine, limiting beliefs such as unworthiness of being well. Okay, things like that.
So I know that I've heard of women using hypnosis when they are in labor, which can help with pain and pain management. What is sort of the history of people using hypnosis as a, I don't know if I want to say pain manager, or I guess, like you were saying, an assistant or an additive to the pain managing process?
Right. So not only in labor, not only does it help with the pain, it actually helps labor progress more quickly. And wow. So it doesn't last quite as long. Part of that is the relaxation factor. Part of it is the decrease in pain. So it's very effective for pain relief and has been shown for pain relief for chronic as well as acute pain such as burns, cuts, wounds, stuff like that. Chronic pain such as arthritis, joint pain, chronic pain syndromes. What happens when there is pain is that there is something called the pain, anxiety, fear cycle that occurs. Kind of the way I describe that is that probably everybody that's listening at one point in their life has hit their thumb with a hammer, right? And so we know what that learned pain is. We know that that's going to hurt. And so when you hit your thumb with a hammer, the pain doesn't start right away. If you remember, there's, a few seconds before you have time to think about it and usually say, oh my gosh, this is really going to hurt. And then guess what? It really hurts.
It starts to really hurt.
And so there's that experience, and then there's that fear, pain, anxiety cycle, right? And so you have the fear from the hammer, you become anxious, and then there's pain. That's not to say that pain isn't really there. Yes, the pain is there. There's pain receptors that have been activated and signaled, and sure, the pain is there, but it's the response to the pain that I'm talking about, okay? And so both with chronic or acute pain syndromes or pain conditions, we have that experience, and so that can lead to the fear and the anxiety. So this is a way to help with the fear and anxiety surrounding a painful situation. There's also direct techniques that we use to train a person to diminish the pain using visualizations and some other processes and tools such as a pain dial.
So what would you say drives your passion here?
Well, I think it's helping individuals heal on a whole different level. So as an MD, as a physician, I can write prescriptions pretty much all day. And there's still a lot of people that won't get well. And I can do hypnotherapy all day, and there's still a lot of people that won't respond or won't, get to where I think they could get to. But nonetheless, it's really healing on a whole different level than writing prescriptions or for me. Anyway, I can only speak personally. And so I think that's the passion, is to help somebody really heal on a whole different level. The emotional level in healing that can occur is just tremendous. And for many people, life-changing. It certainly was for me. It changed my life. So
I know that some people will come and do hypnotherapy to deal with trauma or past trauma or things that they've dealt with in their childhood or past or what have you. What are some of the ways that they can help themselves? And do they have to go through the pain again when they're going through hypnosis or relive it? Or is it more of a processing tool?
So there's a lot of approaches to trauma. Trauma reversal. So certainly cognitive behavioral training, EMDR, rapid eye movement is a good trauma reversal. NLP has a lot of trauma reversal activities. It's neuro-linguistic programming. And then, of course, hypnosis and hypnotherapy. So it really depends, to answer your question, it really depends on the approach. So whether they have to go through the trauma or not. If they do, if we use an approach where we are helping them reverse trauma with hypnosis, yes, they go through the trauma, but we keep them safe. And we do that by detaching them from the situation while they're looking at the situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's almost, and this is just what I'm getting from that. So it would almost be like watching maybe a television show or watching something outside of the situation. You're taking a different viewpoint of what's happening.
Right. So that's a great example, and it actually is very similar to what we do. So it may be watching a movie, but watching the movie of the event in black and white with no sound, while you're not in the theater, but you're in the back of the theater. So you're watching your body in the theater watch the movie in black and white and no sound. And so that then really detaches the person from the situation, keeps them safe. Sometimes we'll even have them imagine themselves turning around so that their back is facing the screen, so they don't have to even look at it, but it's playing in the background. And from a mental and in the mind standpoint, they can completely do that and step into that. So that's looking at the trauma. But to neutralize the trauma, what we do with that is we anchor a pleasant event after and a pleasant event before, and we then go through those. And so they remember the trauma. That's not the point. You can't erase memory. The point is that the trauma is sandwiched between two neutral or pleasant events.
So have you always practiced in New Mexico?
Medicine or hypnotherapy?
Either.
Yeah.
So all the above. I want to see.
Yeah. I've been a practicing physician for 35 years, yeah. And a practicing hypnotherapist for 15 years. To answer your question, no, I've done clinical work in other states and hypnotherapy work in other states as well.
Have you seen the practice of hypnotherapy in Albuquerque, the perception change at all over the years you've been practicing?
I don't know about the perception as much. I know that it's in a lot of conversations now, whereas it wasn't before. And if you look historically, it kind of comes and goes as a field. Back in the 1950s, they were doing a lot of it. In the late 60s, early 70s, and this whole Sylvan mind control, which unfortunately was poorly named, but was actually self-hypnosis. And so it kind of ebbs and flows. It seems to me that hopefully this is a sustained wave, but we're on a wave right now.
So, oh my gosh, my question just completely floated out of my mind. It's right out here. There it is.
I can help you with that.
Honestly, this happens more than you think. This is a pretty common occurrence. So I guess my question would be, how do you think hypnotherapy can help New Mexicans? Is there a certain situation where hypnotherapy is ideal? Maybe it would be the first thing you'd go to rather than something else.
Yeah. That's a really difficult situation because it can be useful in so many situations. So probably about, in my own personal practice, about 50% of my clients are here for an actual medical complaint that they want to use hypnotherapy to help with, okay? And again, it's not about using it instead of, it's using it with. So it's the cancer patient that is hopefully on chemotherapy or radiation, and we're helping them with the side effects, or we're helping them with the emotional components of having that disease, one of those diseases, which can be horrific. I mean, there can be life-threatening, right? So very stress-inducing and all of that. The other half of my clients are here for pretty non-specific situations. I can't focus at work. I don't have energy. I'm angry all the time. Things like that. So that's why I can't really answer your question. Sure. As far as what would be specific, but it's a wide range. I would say almost anything could be useful to, for almost any condition or any situation.
I remembered my question. It came. It popped back.
I told you.
Problem solved right there. So if somebody were to come to you and say, this is baloney, it's pseudoscience, what would you tell them as far as research and statistics and what? Where would you point them, I guess is my question.
Great question. So for the medical literature and scientific literature, we use a search engine called PubMed. And if you PubMed hypnosis, for example, there's almost 15,000 articles out there, medical studies out there. But if you really dig down into them, many of them are anecdotal and small studies. There's some inherent difficulties with doing research with hypnotherapy. You can't, classically, you want to blind the individual to whether they get the intervention or not. Well, you can't really blind somebody to hypnotherapy. They know they're getting it, right? So you can't really do that. So you have to set up controls, etc. So out of those 15,000 articles, there are some really good ones. There's one good article looking, one good study where they had breast biopsy, women undergoing breast biopsy, they received only one hypnotherapy session, and it decreased the amount of pain medication, the amount of anesthesia, and it saved 15 minutes in the operating room for each case, which doesn't sound like a lot, but over a course of a day, if you're saving 15 minutes, you have can fit in a whole nother case. That translates to almost $900 cost savings for the healthcare system.
For all you numbers people out there that want those numbers, that's a lot.
Yeah, there's I think like 250,000 breast biopsy procedures done in the U.S. every year. I mean, even if half of them underwent hypnosis and we saved $900 on each of those, that's a chunk of change, right? We're really saving some money. We've done a couple of studies with hypnosis and hypnotherapy and have published them. One on women with overactive bladder, and we showed that it was more effective actually when you added that to other therapies. We did a large National Institute of Health multi-million dollar study, randomized control study that was completed a couple of years ago with women with urinary urge incontinence. And we enrolled almost 200 women in that study, and they received 8 sessions of hypnotherapy or 8 sessions with a pharmacist. And they were randomized to either have pharmacy medication or hypnotherapy only. And what we found at 3 months is that the groups were pretty equivalent, that hypnotherapy was as effective as the medication. At 6 months, in a subgroup, those women that were moderately suggestible, those that received hypnotherapy did better than medication. And at a year, those that were highly suggestible did better than medication also. So that was a well-designed, really robust study. So yes, there's science there. You have to look for it and you have to be aware of it.
Well, we're at about our halfway point, so we will take a quick break and we will be right back.
What's up, ABQ? Wants to thank our friends at Castle Coffee Company, 727 Tierras Northwest, who has hosted many of the podcast's recording sessions, building a culture of love and community one cup at a time, all done by hand, with coffee blends from Middle State Coffee, Old Barrel Tea Company, Cafe Lush, and pastries from Much Ado About Muffins and The Witching Flower. Castle Coffee Company, downtown at 727 Tierras. Servant-minded, coffee-inspired, community-focused. See the current offerings and order online at castlecoffeeco.com or dial 508-5271. That's 508-5271. Castle Coffee Company.
And we're back. And we'll have you reintroduce yourself, or maybe people who finger slid on the podcast dial. So, there's going to be that one person that's like, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Well, because that finger slips. Yeah. Okay. You're welcome.
I'm Robert Sapien. I'm Chief Medical Officer for Sapien Wellness.
So we were talking hypnotherapy before the break. When somebody comes in, maybe they're a new patient, a new client, they're coming in for the first time, they're maybe a little nervous or they don't know what to expect. Walk us through the process of what does it look like the first time they come in?
So I'll walk you through two different processes,
sure.
Okay? So the first one is just in a regular hypnotherapy practice, okay, such as mine. So usually there's a consultation by phone, and you kind of get an idea of what the individual wants to work on. And then the first session is usually lasts about an hour, and it is discussing kind of a little bit of what we discussed, but in more detail, what the mind consists of, how we can access it, and they get a couple of hypnosis experiences. It's a very effective and efficient therapy. Most individuals, by the time they've undergone 6 to 8 sessions, they've really completed what they've come to work on. It's very, very effective in that way. They can make some major changes in their life within 6 to 8 sessions. Okay, so that's a process for like an individual. Our process for Sapien Wellness is what we do is we offer and provide hypnotherapy services for corporations for them to use as part of their employee benefit package. And so so our customer is the corporation, but our clients are their employees as part of their wellness program. And so we offer that for their employees. The process is we, of course, enter a formal relationship with the corporation. Then those services are offered to their employees. The employees then can schedule directly with us. And we have a network of hypnotherapists. They're called affiliates, actually around the world, but around the U.S. for sure. And the employee then can receive hypnotherapy services with any one of our affiliates.
Maybe there's someone involved in the business, a corporation listening. What's the first point of contact you'd suggest they reach out to if they're interested?
So they can visit our website, sapienwellness.com. They can email gethealthy@sapienwellness.com. Also on the website is a place to request information to generate it's a funnel to generate a contact with us.
See, that's really cool. I would love it if more insurance plans would kind of allow these different types of treatments and things like that, because I think that not everybody fits into the same box, and some people need to try different things. And I think that's a really nice option to know that it's available. So,
right, and we especially for corporations and in health and wellness for them, we can help with motivation for their employees. We can help with chronic and acute problems. We can help with workman's comp and helping them get back to work, especially if there's been a trauma. We can help with that trauma, reversal to really help them get back into the workforce. What we've shown in some pilots that we've done with company, with Sapien Wellness, is that, it increases presenteeism, decreases absenteeism. And when you look at the numbers, they're really astounding, is stress in the workplace. What is that? We all agree.
Yeah.
And nobody's immune to it. And it really, when we know that stress causes the body to release stress hormones, and with those stress hormones active in the body, although they can protect us if we're fighting lions and in a fight or flight, they're not very healthy if they're always there because we're in a stressful environment. That decreases our immunity, decreases our, affects our digestion. We have more infections. Our digestion isn't well. We have no energy, etc. We know that as a fact.
So I have two questions for you. One is, what is something you can think of that you wish people knew about what you do?
I wish, and we can't because it's all a HIPAA-protected relationship.
Yeah, yeah. HIPAA.
But I wish they knew of the successes, I think. Because some of them are nothing short of miraculous. And it's not the hypnotherapist. It's not about the hypnotherapist. It's about the client, whether it be a personal client or an employee from a corporation, that's in the hypnosis chair, because they're the ones doing the work. The hypnotherapist is facilitating the work. But those, when I say it's a miracle, those individuals really, their improvement is sometimes nothing short of miraculous. And they've done that. They've done that themselves.
And then the follow-up question is there something that you feel that you've learned now that perhaps you didn't know when you started?
That's a really interesting question.
I wasn't ready for that either. I was like, where are you going?
I can just say personally, I hope I don't offend people, but I think many people that go into healthcare, we have some element of codependency, right? Mm-hmm. We want to help people, and we want to really help them, sometimes at the expense of ourselves. And that can be exhausting, and I think leads to physician and nursing burnout, health provider burnout, and
compassion fatigue.
Absolutely.
Coming from an ex-case manager, I know that one. Yeah.
And so there we are, you know, trying to save the world and help everybody. But meanwhile, the patient may have limiting beliefs to getting well or getting healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to do it. You can prescribe them the appropriate medication, but they're not going to get well because of those limiting beliefs, right? And so I think what I learned is I learned a lot about myself through the process. And I've learned that, as I said, it's the person in the hypnosis chair. And so I, as a hypnotherapist, if I'm present and do appropriate processes with them, I can't make them change. It's still up to them. And so what I learned is it really helped my codependency because it really is them. Again, I have to do my part. I have to be present and I have to, you know, do everything I can and you know, give that positive vibe, if you will. But at the end of the day, it's not me. It's them. Their success is them.
So kind of going back to that idea of self-care and maybe learning your limits or accepting them. What do you do for self-care when you're not doing hypnotherapy? How do you practice self-care? And then what advice would you give to people maybe who are, I don't know, not doing the work when they come into hypnotherapy? How can they go, okay, you know, I need to take care of this. What are some things they can do at home to sort of get themselves in that mode where maybe they can practice a little more self-care?
Okay. So my self-care includes, I do self-hypnosis a couple of times a day. And it's very, again, meditation can be pretty time consuming. It can be a long. Self-hypnosis is very, very quick. And so I do it a couple of times a day, maybe 5-10 minutes. And it's not a power nap. That's not what I'm talking about.
Those are nice
too, and very healthy. But I'll do that very much for self-care. And then I swim a lot. And swimming for me is a very much a self-care. It is, nobody can bother me. Unless somebody's in my lane, but nobody can bother me because I can't hear anything. Nobody's asking me questions. Nobody's asking for a meeting. I'm not answering a cell phone. And so I can do a lot. Now with that type of exercise, I'm usually just using it to, because I'm counting laps and stuff, I'm usually just using it to be present and clear. I also run a lot. And when I run though, I use that time to actually do work. So it is still self-care, but while I'm running, I will write a speech, for example, or write a paper or whatever in my mind, in my head. And then by the end of the run, I have a good idea of what that's like. So that's the self-care.
So do you have a favorite place in town to go running or swimming?
I usually swim at Midtown.
It's a good facility.
Yeah. And they have a nice pool. And they used to have a bubble up in the winter, and now they don't. So it's really cool to swim when it's snowing. It is it's outside. It's really cool. The water's cold. And then I live south of town. I live in Tomei, so I run over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I used to work at a radio station in Berlin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cars.
Yeah.
The only radio station.
The building's still there, and even has the signs on it still.
Yeah. Yep. Back about 10 years ago, I was a sales rep down there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my cousin started there. Rock and Rick, I don't know if you ever knew he was a DJ.
That was
my cousin. Yeah.
See, and that's what I love about New Mexico, right there. Like, oh, that guy's my cousin. No big deal. That is a true statement. Yeah. My husband's from Santa Fe, and when we were first married, we lived up in Santa Fe, and we'd be at the grocery store, and we'd see random people, and he'd always be talking to random people, and I'm like, who is that? And he'd be like, oh, it's just one of my cousins. And I'm like, how many cousins do you have?
The entire state
of Santa Fe. Yeah.
So we've got a really important question to ask. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Red or green?
Depends on the season.
Okay. Ooh, all right. So we're in spring.
It would be red still.
Okay.
Not green till summer.
Okay. I feel like I agree with that. Yeah. I get that.
And then the follow-up is, what's a good place in town to get good red chili? Besides the grandma's house.
Behind my house, actually. I make a pretty good red chili. But I really like Los Cuates.
Okay.
Yeah.
They have a great happy hour. Yeah. I may need to go hit that up this weekend. Who knows? It's been a while.
Great idea, actually.
Been a while, yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people have some, and I'm going back to the hypnotherapy thing, sorry. All these questions are popping in my brain as we're talking now. I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions. We sort of touched on that a little bit. This is a weird question.
It's
How? It's from a weird person.
This is true. I'll own it. I'm a weirdo. I'm an Enneagram type 4. So
can I give a weird answer then?
We want the weird answers.
So I know a lot of people are conspiracy theorists, or they think about these different ways hypnotherapy can be used for maybe bad intent. Is any of that true? MKUltra, all of that stuff.
Does tinfoil work?
Would you stop? I'm playing devil's advocate here, all right?
It really gets back to that, that you can't control another person's right. mind with hypnosis or hypnotherapy. Brainwashing, different situation, and this is not brainwashing. A lot of those situations involve brainwashing techniques or activity. But as far as hypnotherapy, can't happen. Like I said, I can't even hypnotize a person unless they want me to hypnotize them. I usually hypnotize a person by shaking their hand, but I don't go around hypnotizing people every time I shake their hand.
You're like, you will give me this lunch for free today at Los Cuates.
Wait, did you shake our hands?
I gave you two plugs already.
If you see a man walking around shaking hands and getting free lunch, you know it's Dr. Sapien. Just kidding. Okay, so that's good, because I think a lot of people, like, the internet is a powerful thing and it's a strange thing, and you can go down some rabbit holes when you start to do research or find the wrong information. So,
well, and the other thing is, I mean, having said that, though, you do have, as a consumer, have to do your diligence as far as, you know, what hypnotherapists are you seeing? How well trained are they? What are their credentials, et cetera? Okay.
What credentials should they be looking for? I guess is a good question, because I don't think I would know.
So there's hypnosis, there's hypnotherapy, and then there's hypnotherapy. Okay. So there's a lot of hypnotists in Albuquerque, and they do really good work. Okay. There's a lot of hypnotherapists in Albuquerque, and they do really good work. And then there's fewer, but there's some really good hypnotherapists in Albuquerque. What you should be looking for, so there's no standardization of training. A person can go to a weekend training and say that they're hypnotherapists. Okay. So there's no standardization of training. There's no licensing that occurs. So there's no regulation actually that occurs. There is certification, but there's no licensing. So for that reason, a colleague of mine, Tim Zimmerman, and he and I established an organization. It's the International Board of Hypnotherapy. It's truly an international organization, professional organization for hypnotherapists. In order to belong, though, those individuals have to have a minimum of 600 hours of training, which is a lot of training if you really do the math. They adhere to a code of ethics, they adhere to a scope of practice, and they have malpractice. We have a search engine on that website. If people want to, they can find a local, or if this is outside of Albuquerque or outside of New Mexico, they can look internationally. We have, and around the country, we have hypnotherapists, and that's internationalboardofhypnotherapy.com, and there's a search engine on there to find a local one. Those are the ones I would recommend. Those are the ones that are extremely well-trained, a very high technical skill. Not that the other ones can't, but these ones, it's like on hypnotherapy on steroids, the training they've received.
And so I guess to kind of side note that also, if somebody's wanting to get educated on how to become a hypnotherapist or go to school or learn, what are some avenues that they can take here in New Mexico to get started?
So there's only one school in the entire world that I would recommend.
Okay.
And when I was searching for hypnosis training, that's all I was searching for. I wasn't searching for quality. I just wanted to learn how to hypnotize people, right? And little did I know that the best training was actually here in New Mexico. And the school was in Santa Fe at the time. They've since moved down to Albuquerque. It's the Hypnotherapy Academy of America. It's over on Osuna and Chapel, or Chapel, however you say that. And they offer a curriculum that is robust, well thought out, constantly being undergoing revision. And they've been doing it for almost 30 years. They're the ones that offer, you know, the 400, 600, 800 hours of training. You get practical experience practicing with your classmates. You get coaching, all of that. And so that there is no other training in the world that actually is equivalent to that in number of hours or, I feel, quality.
Wow. So Albuquerque, congratulations. You have something that is one in the entire world. That's
You're
awesome.
On the map.
We're on the map. That's great. No, and I think it's a good resource. If people are looking, it's right here.
Yeah, and so they have, I think, three sessions a year, and about 30 to 40 people in each session. And of those, only two or three are from Albuquerque. The rest are from all over the world. And when you listen to their stories of how they ended up there, they did do the Google searches. They did look, and they said, this is the school that's the best and I wanted the best. And so they come here.
Are there any avenues of hypnotherapy that you're seeing grow or expand, or are there new frontiers that you're seeing your practice kind of begin to explore?
I think the medical application of it is probably where it's growing the most. Traditionally, people think of weight loss and smoking cessation, you know, things like that. And that those can be very effective. I actually don't end up working with a lot of clients with those issues. But I think the expansion is occurring in the medical application, pain control, side effects for medication, stuff like that.
Is there anything else you want to share with people listening?
Don't be afraid of what's in your mind. There's some very helpful things in there. And as I tell my clients, if you for any one moment think that your mind can make you sick or give you problems, if it's that powerful to make you sick and give you problems, then it's that powerful to make you well and give you solutions.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us and letting us enjoy your office for a little bit. It's nice and quiet in here. It's very peaceful. Yeah. So thank you for sharing your time with us today.
That was very fun. Thank you very much.
Hey, what's up, ABQ listeners? Now is more important than ever that we support our local businesses here in the Duke City. Take a listen to some previous podcast episodes to hear more about the local restaurants, breweries, lodging, and museums that really need your help and support right now. Please consider ordering curbside pickup, buy some merchandise or gift certificates, or give a donation to the podcast's friends and community members during this time. And please, Albuquerque, stay home if you can. Do it not only to protect yourself, your family, and friends, but also to protect those first responders who were on the front lines in helping others fight this virus. We can't stress this enough. Please stay home. And contact Ryan and Lindsay if you have an idea for a show. Once they get to go back outside, of course, just send a message to abqwhatsup@gmail.com. Take care of yourselves and each other, Albuquerque, and please join us for next week's episode of What's Up, ABQ.